What up, y'all? You're listening to the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk Podcast with your hosts, Thomas Miller
and Corey Adair,
your go-to podcast for gambling on soccer and hot, hot, hot U.S. men's national team takes. Take it away. Go, go, USA!
Gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey is denied again, but Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Certainly through! Oh, it's incredible!
What up, y'all? You're listening to the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk Podcast with your hosts, Thomas Miller
and Corey Adair,
your go-to podcast for gambling on soccer and hot, hot, hot U.S. men's national team takes. Take it away. Go, go, USA!
Gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey is denied again, but Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Certainly through! Oh, it's incredible!
How long until you...
All right, and welcome to the next episode of the Gabacho Borracho U.S. Soccer Talk Podcast. As always, this time, it is the three of us, Corey Adair at DJ Corfo7, that would be me, and I'm with Dan Angel at DanAngel11 on the Twitterverse, and Thomas Miller at Don Thomas Miller. We're whole again this week, and how are we doing this week, guys?
Better than the San Francisco 49ers quarterback situation.
Yeah. Okay. I got to say something on that. So I, you know, before we were recording, you guys were talking about this. I had somebody present something to me. I don't remember if it was on Twitter or where it was from. And it was a complaint. It was basically saying that it's the Niners' fault for the quarterback situation. And I don't agree with that take at all. They have a guy that they traded for that got them to a Super Bowl. They have a guy that they drafted in the first round, whether he's doing good or not. They invested in the future. And then they got to the NFC Championship with the third guy, who was Mr. Irrelevant. So I would actually go to venture to say that that franchise has tried and done above average, at least.
Oh, yeah.
At putting themselves in a situation where it's a next man up scenario quarterback. I don't know. I don't agree with the take that it's the Niners' fault that Johnson's playing quarterback in an NFC championship game because of the work and the effort that they had put into trying to have three quarterbacks.
Yeah, I don't see how you can blame the 49ers for that. I mean, they had three different quarterbacks on this roster and all of them suffer serious injuries. Like, I'm sorry, that's just bad luck.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I mean, and Jimmy G got hurt in like, what, week 10?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I mean, who was out there to be signed? I think Sam Bradford was like waived around the same time, but Baker. I don't even know what the waiver rules are, but I'm assuming the Rams had a chance to grab him before the Niners did.
Baker. Not, yeah. I think Baker Mayfield.
Sorry. Yeah.
Baker Mayfield was available and the Rams claimed him because they had a worse record than on San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I assume. The only thing I know is like fantasy waivers and I assume it's the same kind of rules. I'm sure that's where they came up with the fantasy rules.
And but yeah, I purposely left you last as the Niners fan to give your opinion on it. So
no, I mean, and then to add on to that, I mean, Josh Johnson got hurt too. I mean,
yeah,
that's kind of like we were talking about. Is like there shouldn't be like a dressing limitation. Like if there was another guy in the practice squad who's also a quarterback, a functional quarterback, like he should have been allowed to dress.
So what you propose is somehow combining practice squad rules with the idea of college walk-ons,
something like that. I don't think anything, and even in regular season, it shouldn't come to a emergency quarterback situation where you got like a punter playing quarterback or a running back playing quarterback. There should be a guy who can like throw a ball.
Yeah, I mean, The 49ers were basically one step short of asking Aaron Andrews to come off the sideline like quarterback.
Yeah, I think that practice squad rosters should be able to be blimped up a little bit. And I think that there should be less limitations in transferring from practice squad to regular squad. Like, yeah. I think that practice squad should be able to be activated on a game day morning. No, I don't know what the rules are, but I think that there should be some availability to pump up the roster numbers in that practice squad in order.
Yeah, I want to say the rule is like you have a 53 man roster, but you can only dress 46 on a game day or something like that. I might be wrong, but I mean, it really should be like no team should ever be put in that situation where you lose your third string quarterback and your fourth string quarterback, and you got to rely on a guy who's telling, you know, his coaches that I can't throw the ball more than 5 yards. I do think the 49ers should just went Christian McCaffrey, Wildcat,
Debo. Like
Debo, Christian McCaffrey, whatever.
No. Debo as the Wildcat quarterback with Christian McCaffrey next to him.
Yeah, just run the damn single wing. But how do you even put that in?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you can't practice that. You got 1 week to get ready. You know, I mean, they weren't expecting Prudy to get hurt, and they weren't expecting Josh Johnson to then get hurt. I know. I think the game was probably out of reach at that point. Like, but I mean,
yeah, but there still should be enough fluidity to where you're not sitting in a conference championship game in the playoffs, and you only have two quarterbacks available. But one of which should have never been playing in the first place, let alone his backup, who honestly, NFL career probably never should have existed as of 4 years ago. Like you're talking about a guy that shouldn't just not be in the NFL anymore.
Hold on.
I do not get political ever in any podcast I record. Colin Kaepernick should have had a job before Johnson for the last 4 years.
Well, the difference is Johnson's a lot cheaper.
Cheaper, yeah.
I mean, just saying, talent-wise.
You can name probably 20, at least 20 quarterbacks who have started a game where you could probably say the same thing about Kaepernick. But I mean, yeah, we don't want to get into it because
yeah, I'm just pointing out that there are names of people that haven't played in years that I would much give me Fitzpatrick still to this day.
Yeah,
I mean, at that point, I'd probably take Jordan Tamu from the Tampa Bay Bandits.
That could be a thing where
it could, yeah.
Like instead of playing a spring league,
great idea for
Sorry, go ahead.
Like assign each division. Like it never happened. I'm just kind of talking out of you know where here. But like assign each division one USFL team as like kind of a minor league feeder. And if they need an emergency player, they can call up a guy from that roster to practice with them and be eligible.
Dude.
Yeah, I agree.
No.
The thing I would add on to it is like just play the USFL games like Tuesdays and Wednesdays or whatever, you know. Like I know we got
they play the USFL games in April.
That's what I'm saying, is don't play.
No. Do the anti small potatoes move. And you're not necessarily trying to compete with the NFL. You're playing on the days that the NFL doesn't play. So midweek games only.
Mm-hmm.
And you could even go with a small league where you have one team that's for each division or two teams per division of the NFL. So you have 32 teams, you have a 16 team league, or you have an 18 league. And that one team feeds that division if they have to call up a player.
Yeah, not bad. Like a minor league system in baseball. If you lose a bunch of pitchers, you can call up some pitchers from your.
But it's affiliated to divisions.
I mean, the NFL is the only major league anywhere that doesn't have a minor league system. I mean, like soccer, like you can have a second team in a second tier league. Like Barcelona has FC Barcelona B squad.
Yep.
Hockey, I mean, you have the AHL. NBA, you have the G League, and of course, some MLB, you have the minors. There's no equivalent system in football.
Yeah, Premier League, you got the U23 League that plays, and you know they call out guys all the time. I just saw a thing where it's I forget which team has used the most. I mean, there's like four teams who haven't used one guy from the U23 League,
And they're probably
the other 16.
And they're probably the richest teams.
Even in freaking Finland, Dom, they can do it. Like my third season on Football Manager, I get offered on the chance to create a KTP2 to give my younger guys a developmental league.
Absolutely. Wait, so this is what we do. We assign college to NFL teams based on region.
Power five conferences. With only, no. Here we go. I got an idea. You just sparked something there, Thomas.
No.
Seniors only.
Well, yeah.
Seniors only. Fourth year in college only.
Mm-hmm.
And then one power five team per region. And they can call up any player from that power five conference. That's a senior only. Fourth year only. So Pac-12 gets the AFC West, NFC, like you delegate the teams based off of the region.
Absolutely, yeah.
Dude,
we need to write this up.
This does make for some awkward fits for some teams, like when the Cowboys are calling up guys from the ACC.
No. That's what I mean. It's regionally based.
Yeah, okay. Cowboys would be tied to the Big 12, obviously.
Well, yeah, they should be, but they're
in the NFC.
The NFC North, all four of those NFC North teams are only going to be able to pull from the Big 10.
Yeah, that would work. But then
let's see, AFC North teams. So Indianapolis would only be able to pull from the Big 10.
Indianapolis is in the South.
No, it's not.
Yeah, they are.
I agree, but the NFL doesn't.
I don't care. It's in a Big Ten state. I know. Indianapolis would pull from the Big Ten. I'm trying to think of the other. Nashville. That this is where things get a little dicey. But
SEC.
Jacksonville's
in the SEC.
Jacksonville's definitely SEC. And then what is it? Houston. That doesn't make sense for North. So
SEC. It does because you got Texas and Oklahoma and Texas A&M.
I'm saying AFC North. Them being
AFC North is Baltimore.
Yeah,
Baltimore, Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Okay, Cleveland, Cincinnati, both Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh, Big Ten.
ACC or Big Ten.
This is where this would get delegated. It would have to get delegated one way or the other.
Right.
Baltimore can only call a guy from Maryland. And Rutgers.
From the DMV.
Or
from
Boston the DMV. College, dude. They'd be fun.
From the DMV, so only Maryland.
Maryland, Boston College.
Who else are they going to get guys from? Howard.
But this is actually pretty manageable because that's six teams right away. Six teams off the board right away that have to go to the Big Ten.
Yeah,
and there's four other conferences, so 6 times 24. We're getting pretty close to 32. So you'd have to put Pittsburgh into the Big Ten.
AFC West would be the weirdest one because you're looking at a couple Pac-12s, maybe a Big 12. Yeah,
couple Pac-12s,
Big 12s.
Oh, I have an idea. So yeah, Kansas City definitely goes Big 12, but the Broncos
Mountain West,
all four NFC West teams go to the Pac-12.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Except for the fact that technically the Rams and the Chargers are going to be in the Big Ten.
Yeah, that. Yep, it's fucked.
It's regional.
They're moving.
USC and UCLA, Big Ten schools.
But I was gonna say Chargers, Raiders, and Broncos. So that's seven teams, which helps us with the numbers.
Yeah, I know.
And you're probably I think there is a way to do that, but it would never happen.
Maybe make it based on states, like Green Bay can only call up a guy from Wisconsin.
The Jets and the Giants have to fight over Rutgers.
Rutgers,
yeah. And now you're getting into the same issues that we
Syracuse and Rutgers.
Syracuse is in New York. All those players go to the Bills.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
You guys are joking about this, but I fucking hate this shit. You guys are joking about it, but this is the stuff that pisses me off. I hate the fact that the SEC gets to claim so much dominance when all the talent's right there.
Yeah. I mean, we're joking about it.
I know.
This is so geographically stupid. I mean, your idea is not stupid. The geography of the NFL and the NCAA is insane.
It really is.
I think if the NCAA got excommunicated, which is what it seems like that seems like the end result when it comes to Power Five football, then something like this could happen, though, is what I wanted to say.
I think NCAA football is completely capable of standing on its own in some sort of minor league thing. I think, you know, basketball obviously makes it probably as much money, especially at certain schools, it makes as much money. But then also you add into NCAA basketball, the international aspect of it. And like,
hey, that's been my argument for KU to the Big Ten for years.
Yeah. A thing you could do. I mean, Mexico has started a football league. So
Mexico's had football. Northern states in Mexico have had football in high
school. But I mean, yeah, they have like a kind of decent looking league. I mean, they're going to play here, think spring. It might be same as the European. I think it's spring. But I mean, you see guys going down there. I mean, they're signing contracts down there. Guys who played in the NFL.
I firmly believe Mexico could probably not beat most NFL teams, but
they could not beat even one NFL team.
I'm saying that if they had a time to develop, right, they could run a system that could beat the bottom feeders.
I was saying them as a minor league system, you know, so we don't have to like use college athletes, students, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Cleveland and Cincinnati would be, you know, the pipeline because they could just grab guys from Ohio State. And, you know,
you want to use that as the pipeline.
Carolina.
The Atlanta Falcons.
Atlanta Falcons.
The Jags.
Yeah, because who would tie the themselves Saints. Alabama, you know, or Auburn?
The Saints would never again ever be the Aints. Like, yeah. But yeah. All right. I think that was good banter. I love that shit. Let's go ahead and dive into our first topic.
Before we do, one quick thing. Has any football fan seen more terrible quarterback gone play in a calendar year than Thomas has had to watch from over the past several months between Iowa and San Francisco?
Yes.
Yeah. Iowa State.
Yes. Yes. Yes, they have. Nebraska fan and Denver fans. Yes.
Okay.
Come on, dude. Russell Wilson.
Casey Thompson missed 8 weeks and we had that fucking, oh my God. I'm not gonna get us canceled. Brock's little brother should never play football again.
Right.
And Russell Wilson, that cornball.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a worse combination for a pro college fan.
This is why I love Iowa State
because we both have affiliations now with the 49ers after this season. Iowa State really suffered through a very terrible quarterback play year or two. Yeah. They turned into Iowa. They beat Iowa. They had to become Iowa to beat Iowa. Beat Iowa, and then they became a terrible, terrible offense in a league where everybody's a really good offense.
Did Iowa lose to Iowa State and Nebraska this year?
Yes. Yeah, they did. Yeah. They still beat Minnesota. That streak's still alive.
You did do that. Floyd kept his home.
Yep. I love that pig.
All right. I'm gonna go into a couple quick hits.
Fleck doesn't know what it looks like.
Yeah, he's still
seen, sure. He keeps getting the axe, but he can't fucking get a pig.
Yeah.
There's a joke in there somewhere, but I don't know if I want to go there.
I just want to do a couple quick soccer quick hits. Like, I know we didn't talk about them, but like I'm just gonna bring them up really quick. The U-17 CONCACAF championships start here in about a week. I believe the top three or four teams advance to the U-17 World Cup, which is later on in the summer. Just a little couple things about our U-17 team that we announced. We have like several players that are already in Europe. One is Diego Cochin, who's a goalkeeper. He's already at Barca. We have his name is Noakaya Banks. He's at Augsburg. Got to throw in Stuart Hawkins, who's a Sounders guy. We have also Kaylor Figueroa, who is the son of Figueroa, who is a Honduran legend, but he was born here in the U.S. He's at Liverpool already. He's going to be on the squad. We have one other guy at Barca. Who is it? Oh, Adrian Gill. So, I mean, the rest of the guys are pretty much MLS youngsters, but I mean, it's pretty impressive that we got a U-17 team that at this point in 2023, we got a bunch of guys who are already in Europe. And the other thing I wanted to mention, quick shout out to Nathan Apoka, who is a Syracuse collegiate.
Yeah, big time transfer.
Yeah, he went to Leicester FC. He started his career, I was talking to Dan about this, at Lindsey Wilson College, NAIA school in Kentucky, Columbia, Kentucky. Then transferred to Syracuse. He now signed with Leicester FC. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive in the modern day of what we see where you kind of tie yourself to an MLS club when you're really young, going to their academy, and then you make it to Europe. We still have, you know, guys going the other route, the traditional route that guys used to have to do in the
US. Our traditional route.
USA traditional route, like a Polka. Just a couple examples of guys who did that same route. Daryl DK.
Yep.
Or Orlando, what are they called? Orlando FC.
Yep.
And Robbie Robinson, who's actually tied to Chile. But
and hey, Syracuse has actually produced some decent talent over the years.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. ACC, they suck at a lot of fucking things, but man, they're the best
basketball at soccer. Basketball and soccer, baby.
Yep.
I mean, basketball is all we care about.
But yeah, hey, you know what this shows?
ACC soccer is outstanding. And actually, when I covered the NCAA tournament on Sweet 16 in Lexington, like the Pitt players even said, because Kentucky was the number one seed and came in undefeated, and the Pitt players said that they were confident because they knew that other than Louisville, Kentucky hadn't played an ACC team all year, and the level of competition is a lot tougher where they play than what Duncan.
Yeah.
Well, and I also think it speaks on that, you know, the what is it, the Northeast, the Northern Seaboard, or however you Eastern Seaboard, especially on the northern side of it, that's always been a hotbed for basketball talent. And now you're seeing it seep into soccer talent.
Yeah.
Because it's not only players from Syracuse that are doing things. There are youth academies from that region that are doing things.
Sure.
You know, the Tyler Adams, the Aronson brothers, the Pulisic.
Yeah. Yep.
And now you get this, what was it, a Poku or a Poco?
A Poka.
Mm-hmm. And I did see that transfer, by the way, and I was all about I absolutely love the fact from somebody that says, hey, instead of hyper-focusing my career on this one sport at this club, trying to make money at the age of 16, I'm going to go get an education and try to ball out. And, you know, I might be a little bit older, which might hurt my value, but if I get there, I get there.
Yeah.
That's an American mentality.
Yep.
American mentality from a Ghanaian.
Was he?
Both. Yeah, he has an opportunity.
To anything bad. Was he like, was he born here or like, you know,
he's a dual national. Yeah.
But I mean, he could be a dual national if his parents came here and then he was born here. He could still play for them. I got a feeling that he's probably lived most of his life here.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just being kind of like, you know, a little bit sarcastic with that. But I wasn't
trying to get into anything, you know, awkward about it. I was just saying that it just seems like an American mentality.
Yeah. Did want to bring up too that like that area we're talking about. A lot of those people, there are people there that will tell you lacrosse is going to overtake soccer as like whatever, like the fifth or sixth most popular sport, because that's where the most, you know, lacrosse talent is produced too.
Yeah, but all lacrosse talent is fucking washed up football players.
I don't.
Yeah. I mean, not in that area.
Not in that area. It's big there.
No, it is good. It's huge.
I mean, that's why that line from Wedding Crashers, crab cakes and football, that's what Maryland does. No, crab cakes and lacrosse are what Maryland does. Maryland sucks ass football.
Okay.
You've seen Wedding Crashers.
We just reached a whole new pinnacle in this recording of this show, because for the love of God, I would have never in my life imagined Dan would quote Wedding Crashers. In my life, never imagined that.
Yeah. Nobody else would have either.
Yeah. I gotta correct myself. It is a Poku. I wrote down the U like in bad writing. It is a Poku, not a Poka. So sorry, Nathan Apoku. I said your name. I'll be supporting you. I mean, like, what do you guys think? Like, his entry at Leicester City will be like.
Well, I
so just automatically sent to like a under 23 team or like.
He's gonna have to earn his stripes. They're gonna send him somewhere low. They're not gonna bring him up right away. If they were where they were 3 years ago and they were playing in all these other you know, international tournaments and having all these extra match days, then I could see him getting minutes in, say, like the FA Cup, right? But they're not in that position right now. So I don't think he's going to play right away. Another thing I saw too is I don't remember the name, but the last time a Division I soccer player from the United States instantly went to Europe, it didn't work out very well. I'm not saying that that's this scenario too, but I would imagine he's going to have to earn his stripes in a developmental scenario before he plays for Leicester in anything serious. Right. Are they in Europa or Conference League at all?
No.
And that's what I mean. If they were, I think you'd play some minutes in the next month or two, but I don't think they are. So I don't think he will. But if he comes in with the right mentality and just doesn't stop working as hard as he can, then all bets are off.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's proven himself to be above. Dude, whoever scouted him, got it way wrong. Because, I mean, he started his career at an NAIA college team. So, I mean,
dude, and
now he's at Leicester City.
His goal to assist ratio in the matches played in that last season for Syracuse, I think it was something like 21 goals and 17 assists.
Yeah, absolutely dominant.
Yeah.
He was the player of the year 2022. Men's season is in the fall, right? Yeah, Dan covered it.
It'd be
interesting. I mean, one guy we can compare him to is DK, where like when DK got his meteoric rise in the championship, when he came and even played with the USA, like you could notice some technical skill missing like right away, right? Is that a fair assessment? And I'm not hating on DK at all. I do like him, but
It was raw athletic ability and strength and athleticism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do believe though that if he keeps up the work ethic that got him into the position that he's in, then he will see minutes by the end of the season. I'll say that.
He's already at OH Leuven, which is a Slovenia. It's a Belgium. It's like a Belgium second division. They already sent him out.
Well, then he'll play a lot.
I mean, that's better. That's better than, I don't know.
Not playing. Yeah, absolutely.
Not playing, or maybe, I don't know. Like we can't, I don't want to like, you know, attack any like USL second division team. I mean, what do you guys think? Like Belgium second league or like.
Riding the pine? Omaha.
You know, third level.
Yeah, dude, I would. I would rather him be signed by a Prem side and play in second tier Belgium league than sign for an MLS squad and play 25% of the minute.
Agreed.
Easily.
He can learn a skill set.
Because exactly. What you were just getting at right there. The coaching over there is going to be at a completely different level, to the point where he's going to develop better. And if he keeps that work ethic, if he has, what was it? I said 21 and 17. If he has 38 goal scoring responsibilities or goal scoring attributes in a one season stretch in a second tier Belgium team, he's going to a Dutch team. Like he's moving up. Like if he keeps those types of numbers up, he's moving up and he's going to keep moving up until he plays in the Prem.
Yeah. Yeah, so, the only argument against it is that he's probably 21, 22, maybe 23 at this point. And, you know, guys are signing at 15, 16, making that same jump. They go from a second division Belgium team to Genk, then they go to Holland, then they go to the...
And again, like we said earlier, it's okay to be a little bit late on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because here's the thing, here's the difference. He's honest about his age.
What's that?
I don't know what scandal's been out about lying about ages.
Baseball players?
Baseball's one of them.
Okay.
What about African internationals?
Oh yeah.
How old is Nkuku?
43.
No, but I mean, you get my point. You get my point.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean.
So there's
more value for you if you're younger. So like,
yes, there is more value if you're younger, and he's 21, about to be 22. But a guy like Nkuku says he's 18 at Leipzig, but in reality, he's 2021 and then moves to Chelsea. See what I mean? So people are lying about their ages. So at least the one, I believe it's okay to be a couple years late in this aspect, as long as you have the right mentality.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd rather be late and be honest about my age and have the right mentality than be dishonest about my age, have the right mentality, and still be moving at the actual same age.
I agree.
All right. So should we get into the first actual topic?
Yeah, let's get into topic one. 45 minutes into the show.
That's all right for us.
Is it Leeds USA?
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
Dan, is it Leeds USA?
At this point, it pretty much is.
So Corey's thing in the beginning of the season when he said, all right, I will abandon Liverpool and go for Leeds. Has it come full circle now? Is this
referring to yourself in the third person going to be a thing now?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
But I did say that I needed to pick somebody that wasn't Liverpool because that was young Corey who didn't understand the dynamics of European soccer, who didn't know those things. And I just picked a lovable loser, what I thought was a lovable loser, but was never a lovable loser.
True.
And so I had to pick another team. And at the time, I had new moves from Adams and Aronson. And I had Jesse Marsh being announced or had been announced. And now I get McKinney. I think I'm going full sell, guys. I think I'm just going to be a Leeds fan.
I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, they got sweet jerseys. The thing I'm worried about, man, like there's a ton of games to be played, but they're right on the cusp of relegation. And that's like one thing I would hate to see, all these American guys going there and then they get relegated. That'd be honestly probably like a worst case scenario. So I don't think they'll be relegated. I think they have enough talent to beat out.
So that would prove ultimate rig status as me as a fan, though.
You would. Yeah. You would not be able to be a fan of anything.
All right. I have no problem tempting fate. I am officially announcing on February 2nd, 2023. I am no longer a Liverpool fan. I am now a Leeds fan.
Congratulations.
I have
make sure to look up. Make sure to look up Leeds United history.
I'm literally
why a bunch of Premier League teams hate them before you make that declaration. I don't know if you have already.
I'm on the wiki right now. I don't know. What am I looking? What am I looking for? What am I supposed to be looking for? Is it Don Revere?
It's just, yeah, there's bad blood between a lot of teams, which makes their games with like the top tier clubs better because, you know, their fans, their firms.
Well, just give the quick synopsis.
Well, like I don't have it on the top of my head. I just know that. Like,
why do they hate him?
Because I don't know. I would have to look it up, and I'm gonna cut this part out because I don't know off the fucking top of my head.
Okay. Well, you brought
it up. There's a thing, though. There's a thing. Hold up. Why is Leeds United hated? Leeds United physical approach, poor discipline, and dirty tactic earned them the nickname "Dirty Leeds" after first division game 1964 against Everton.
Okay. So 4-2 ranked
73-74 Leeds squad as the most hated British football in British football history.
So you don't even have to cut it out because I said, what was it? The Don Rivera. And that's exactly what it was.
Well, I'll cut out the part where I didn't know.
That's fine.
That sounds stupid.
But yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm hated for my college football team. So.
You are hated for your college world.
And it's a Northern England side, so it fits.
Mm-hmm.
It
fits. John Snow.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Dude, this is perfect. Yeah, I'm a Leeds
fan. I think it's perfectly reasonable to switch your allegiances once as an adult if you have a compelling reason for doing so, and something like that certainly qualifies.
And I agree that like American, yeah, I mean, okay, I support West Ham United. They have zero Americans right now. They don't even like Americans, to be honest. And like, I mean, Leeds has three and the coaches.
So four.
I mean, what's not to like about them as an American supporter?
Yeah.
This would be like somebody who loves USMNT being a Fulham fan still to this day because they're 10 to 15 years older than me.
And they exist. Yeah, they exist.
Right.
They do exist. Exactly. Yeah. They totally exist. That's a real thing. That's why I say it.
That's true.
Yeah.
But the whole reason we brought up Leeds USA is McKinney is now at Leeds. So now we get, we, we, we don't get the MMA that it's not MMA now, it's MAA, but we get it on a club side, guys.
Yeah.
If I've ever seen a reason for a tactical change, something that I've argued for over a year on this podcast, going to a 4-2-3-1, it's never been more present than now. The fact that McKinney, Adams, and Aaronson play together. McKinney and Adams are the two, and Aaronson plays the middle spot in the three. And it is our best formation. Put Reyna out to the right, put Pooley out to the left, and do whatever the fuck you want at striker.
Yeah.
You could even put Reyna out at striker and put Weah out at right wing. You could put Pulisic out at striker, put Reyna on the left and Weah out on the right. I mean, the point is that that trifecta right there with them playing so much together, you have so much flexibility. You could move McKinney up and play Musa next to Adams. You could leave Musa back and play McKinney next. Like, you could take either Musa or McKinney out and play Reyna in that spot.
Yeah.
I firmly believe with the talent pool that we have that the 4-2-3-1, especially with those three guys playing together under an American, gives us the best chance to win from this point forward. And I don't even think it's close. I don't think it's an argument.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this exact moment. Yeah. Like, absolutely. I mean, assuming they stick together, they stay up, things like that. I agree with you.
Adams isn't going anywhere. He's arguably playing the best six in the league.
But if they were, I'm just saying, if they were to go down, they would most likely, all three would probably leave. You know what I mean?
I don't think they're going to go down with those three, though.
I don't think they'll go down.
I think they're better
than all the teams that they're above, Ron, for sure.
I think McKinney is the best midfield addition into the Prem. I know that Chelsea just sign in the, I know Enzo Fernandez just signed. Mm-hmm. Who'd he sign with?
Chelsea.
Yeah. Enzo signed with Chelsea. I think there was Bellingham never came.
No,
but Enzo was a big one. I think McKinney's going to have the biggest impact of all the midfield signings in this window.
Yeah. So when I was looking up all the most hated teams, like, this is clearly like a British website. They rank Manchester United as the most hated team. Leeds is fifth. Their main reason being that only 29% of Manchester United fans live in Manchester. The rest are worldwide. That's pretty crazy. You think about it. Manchester United, definitely one of the most famous teams in the entire world, but not even close to the favorite team in their city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Chelsea was number two. Liverpool's number three. I think those have obvious reasons. MK Dons was ranked as number four because I believe they relocated the old Wimbledon.
Correct.
Yeah. And took away a very traditional team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. Like, three Americans playing on one team in the Premier League is something we probably never mentioned.
All right. That Dons thing's fucking weird. I don't even know what else to say about it. That just feels unique. And Leeds being at five, I'm okay. I'll own it. I'll totally own it. I have no problem being hated. None whatsoever. But I will say that Man City being where Man City is with the money that Man City has, not being above Leeds is a little weird. That's a little weird. Just a little bit weird.
Well, yeah. The reason, did you hear the reasoning? It was that only 29% of Man United's fans.
Yes, all of that. Yeah, all of that. That doesn't affect that. That has nothing to do with Man City being below Leeds.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a history thing because Man City really wasn't an amazing team until the first part of the century.
Exactly. When they got bought out. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Even though it's a recent poll, it still kind of shocks me that Man City hasn't like skyrocketed to number one because it's oil money. And they're dominating the league with the best coach in the world. Why wouldn't everybody hate them? Like, the fact that Leeds is still five and Leeds is petty, minuscule, not like a ridiculously small club, but still, you know what I mean? Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, I understand the Man U part. I understand the Liverpool part. People died being against Liverpool back in the 80s, you know, and Liverpool is a giant as far as history and tradition. And then Chelsea is the Liverpool of the 80s today in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And Man U is Man U, you know, and 28% or whatever you said, that's all besides. It blows my mind that Man City is not above Leeds in that list.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, they take the poll here in a few more years. Possible that Man City has moved up. Millwall is actually number six.
I was going to ask where Millwall was, and yeah. I'm sure that if not for the relocation of Wimbledon to Milton Keynes, that
yeah,
Dom wouldn't even be on the list. But Millwall makes absolute sense.
Yeah, Millwall has their history. I think we've gone over it on this podcast. Very bad firm, very bad fans. Arch rival West Ham.
Yep.
Fuck them guys.
Millwall can't get out of the championship.
Yeah, that's where they live.
You probably don't bring on bad karma here, Thomas.
No, I mean, seriously, if there's a Millwall fan that listens to this, like, I would be very shocked. But I mean, go fuck yourself, Millwall fan.
I'm just saying, it ain't looking too good for West Ham. So try to live,
dude,
be a great.
Get to see the rivalry two times a year. I mean, they're going to have to play in an empty stadium.
They're going to have to
empty Olympic Stadium. Imagine that. Olympic Stadium that holds like 78,000 people, they'll have to play in an empty is because they know the fans will just literally have riots the entire game. I mean, it's really one of the most, I mean, it's the craziest, one of the craziest rivalries in all sports. Like,
it is
very not known, especially in the United States. But I mean, the last time they played, the game was interrupted because of fighting in stands. I mean, we see it at, we used to see it, especially in when the Chargers in San Diego and LA Raiders, but I mean, nothing close to this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
Millwall don't actually find their way out this time.
Where are they at? Sixth,
right? So right now they are in eighth place, but they are 3 points out of third, and they have two games in hand on Middlesbrough.
Yeah, I swear, every single season Millwall has kind of the same story where they're like, they're right on the cusp of at least making the playoff, but then
right,
what happens, they never get there.
Yeah,
it would be insane. So, it would be so insane to see Millwall in the Premier League, especially if West Ham
stayed in
the Premier League that season.
Burnley and Sheffield are almost certain to be promoted to the Premier League because Burnley is on 62, Sheffield is on 57, and those two are 12 points clear of anybody else.
Right.
So, but beyond that, there is only a 8-point difference between third and 16th.
Yeah, very tight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The good thing is they play 46 matches. So, I mean,
they do.
Everything usually kind of gets cleared out.
Yeah, that's the good news. And it's also the bad news because that fixture congestion really adds up.
Yeah.
Oh, Bristol City is in 17th. God, I want them relegated.
All right. Should we?
Hey, I mean, Thomas, as much as you want West Ham Millwall, I want the Bristol Derby to happen.
Yeah, me too. That'd be intense. But you have said on the show that you want to see your guys go up and not.
I do, but we're not going to get there. I mean, we're sitting in a comfortable mid table position this year. Like we're in 12th. It ain't going to happen this year. I would love to see us go up, but I mean, right now, like, Barnsley sitting sixth for the last playoff in the last playoff spot. They're on 46 points and they have two games in hand over us and they're 9 points ahead. So I'm realistic. We're not getting there.
Right. Right.
So we're not in any danger, but we're not going to be a championship club now.
All right. And then, so moving on to another team that's very dear to your heart. The Seattle Sounders are currently smack dab in the middle of the Club World Cup. They will be playing, take it over.
We will be playing the Egyptian champion Al Ahly, who just beat Auckland City of New Zealand in the first round on 3-0. Wednesday, 3-0, which I cashed on quite nicely.
Very good. So, like, I mean, we'll let you lead this segment for sure, because, like, so, like, first of all, like, what are your expectations for this? What do you think about like an MLS team potentially going up against maybe say Real Madrid if it gets to that point? Things like that.
Sure. Sure. So as far as my expectations for this match, it's very winnable. I'm just hoping that the Sounders don't look ahead to Real Madrid because we have such an opportunity here to go up against a European giant And that would be an absolute shame to blow it against a side that is capable. I watched them Al Ahly match against Auckland City. This is a good defensive side. Granted, they were playing against very weak opposition, but it's gonna take a good amount of work from Rui Diaz or Morris to unlock this defense. I think this is probably going to be a match where we win 1-0 or maybe 2-0. But, I mean, we've got to stay focused on this match and make sure that we're completely concerned about job one before we get to basically play with nothing to lose, because I mean, we're probably going to lose that match to Real Madrid 4-0 if we end up playing them. But the fact that we'd even be playing a competitive match against the UEFA champion, I mean, that's something that couldn't even have been dreamed out of MLS when they started this. So that's just a really cool thing if we can get there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like it would be a huge moment in U.S. soccer.
I mean, it's kind of like in March Madness when the lower level, the small conference school gets their shot at Duke or Kansas or North Carolina.
I wouldn't say it's like 16 seed versus 1 seed, but it would be like an 8 seed second round game, you know, something like that, right?
I'd say it's probably more like 12 seed gets on a run and faces the number 1 seed in the Sweet 16.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a thing of it doesn't matter what MLS team you pull for, or if you don't even really care for the MLS, like you want to see him succeed in this. And it doesn't matter at all who Real Madrid runs out there. Doesn't matter if it's some sort of B squad, A squad.
It could be the Galaxy, it could be LAFC, it could be Sporting Kansas City, it could be the Union. I mean, it could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it's the Sounders. I am. This is a team that has prioritized like youth development and building from within.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm glad it's the Sounders. I really want to see them do well. I'm sorry to cut you off. I just had to throw that in.
No, I'm in agreement. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
100%. Yeah, I mean, Liga MX has dominated the regional tournament forever, and now an MLS team gets a chance. So I mean, yeah.
Yeah, my goal for this tournament is third place.
Be a beautiful thing.
Yeah, like I think we can absolutely beat them, Al Ahly, and I like our chances against them, either Casablanca or the Saudi Arabian champion. I do not expect us to come anywhere close to beating Real Madrid. We're playing with house money in that match. But if we get there and lose, as I expect we will, hopefully we give a credible showing against Real Madrid and then come out and win the third place.
Yeah. And we've seen when I know, you know, friendlies aren't necessarily something to like, you know, hang your hat on, but I mean, we've seen Liga MX teams at least give good games to whoever the UEFA champion is.
Yeah.
Time and time and soccer and upsets a lot easier to make happen. You know, mm-hmm. we see it all the time where like a plus soccer.
Yeah,
1800 and wins. I mean, it happens all the time. So it'll be interesting. Yeah. Hopefully they get to that point. I believe the game is February 4th.
Actually, it is kind of funny that you say that, because like so on Football Manager, that scenario actually did play out where the Sounders ended up in the Club World Cup without me using them. They ended up making the Club World Cup final and upsetting Bayern. It's like, figure that one.
Yeah. I mean, video games for reality. I mean,
90 minutes over the course of 90 minutes, anything's possible. I don't expect it to happen. Stefan Fry would have to play the match of his life on steroids, like five times the performance he gave against Toronto in the 2016 MLS final. But
any given Sunday.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be any given Wednesday.
Yes, I know. It's just, I'm just saying the phrase.
Yeah, and then you can check out that first game of Seattle. They play 9:30 Eastern, 8:30.
I believe actually we are in the second match of the day, so that would take place at 11 a.m. Central.
I want to say it was moved up. We might have to double
check. If it was moved up, somebody up there likes me, because my niece is having her first birthday during the second half of the match. But no, it was not moved up, according to
what day is that?
Saturday.
Let's go. All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I can't wait. This is actually something I am genuinely looking forward to. I really do want to see the Sounders do well. And I do actually think the MLS has gotten themselves to a point where they play a similar enough style of ball compared to Liga MX. You know, like I do think that this one-touch pass, controlling it, this technical ability, I do think MLS has tried to elevate themselves to this type of thing. And I think it's going to be fun to watch. I don't know how far they'll go. And it all depends on who they match up with. But I think they're going to care.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they're being given their all. I mean, they're out of season. You know, it's always the thing with these tournaments at this time with MLS. Is, well,
you know what? We can't help, Thomas, we can't help it that it gets to negative 10 Fahrenheit tonight.
Well, I'm not saying that.
Oh, no. That was just me bitching about the weather.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, our nation is not built for the traditional soccer schedule, but I mean, that's just something that, you know, Seattle's going to have to deal with. But like, at the same time, I think they'll be giving it as much of an effort as any other club at this tournament, you know, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
You always want to be that team.
Oh, I would absolutely. I mean, no, this absolutely matters to us for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I, off of just thinking about human instinct type of shit, I would say that CONCACAF and CONMEBOL would probably try the hardest. And I think UEFA would try just as hard as it takes to win.
And that's all that they've had to do because UEFA keeps winning this thing over and over.
Yeah. But I think if somebody was going to give them a run for their money, it would probably be CONMEBOL first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there was any other club team after that, it would have to be CONCACAF. But I think the effort, no matter what, those two regions are going to give the most effort.
CAF as well, because, I mean, the Moroccan champions playing in front of their fans.
Yeah.
And that country is going to be hyped as hell after making the last four of the World Cup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's actually a very good talking point right there. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Especially considering that there were a lot of international players for that Moroccan team that play in Europe, but there were a good enough amount of domestic players to have pride in this tournament. So,
yeah,
I think that's a good segue, though, because coming this summer, what do we got going on, guys?
Under 17 World Cup. Women's World Cup?
No, not that.
Well, that's this summer. Next summer. Yeah,
I think you might be referring to next summer.
Oh, shit, it is 2023. Whatever. Next summer.
Next summer.
My bad.
We have Copa America coming here.
Yes. Once again, bringing it back. 2016. One of my favorite tournaments to watch. Yeah. Very memorable games. Argentina versus Chile in the final. Chile versus Mexico, 7-0.
Oh, dude, I love that match.
One of my favorite. Every once in a while, I'll still throw a game on. What's his name?
Alexis Sanchez?
No. There's a Mexican announcer. I forget his name right now, but I mean, he's for Azteca. He's like he's the Mexican national announcer. And like, he just came unglued. He's had several moments where he's been hilariously losing his mind. And that game against Chile was one where he just went on and on about how outclassed they were and like how they weren't ready for anything that Chile had to offer. And United States in the semifinal too is the same sort of thing. Argentina won 4-0, I think. Jurgen Klinsmann was still the coach. I remember there being like seven forwards on the pitch at one time for the US, like just trying to come back. Like, I mean, it's gonna be, once again, you know, because it is kind of like a made for stadium money, made for television tournament. Like, maybe some teams won't take it as seriously as they should.
Oh, dude,
I mean this one.
Well, in 2016, Brazil got knocked out in the.
Yeah, no, that
oh, no, just, Brazil's you know, winning.
This one's the real thing.
Brazil's winning this. Brazil this is going to show thing. Up here and go on a world tour, and this like the. If sports were rigged, this is Neymar's tournament.
Like the whole Centenario thing. That was a for money thing. This is the real thing as far as
Copa calendar goes, at least.
Yeah, because the reason we're hosting this is because Ecuador chose not to host. So basically, like, the only real nation that can host Copa America as far as what it is now on short notice is Brazil, but Brazil has hosted the past two tournaments. So CONMEBOL decided, you know what, we've got this partnership with CONCACAF anyway, screw it, let's sell them hosted in the United States. That way it won't go in favor any of the CONMEBOL nations.
Yeah.
I think there's enough fair weather fans in the United States that they're going to support Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to fair weather fans. The United States is the perfect place to host the South American tournament. I'm saying there's so many people from those countries here. I mean,
but I'm also saying that when you get to the nitty gritty in the knockout stages, United States fans in general, they love to play this, you know, game where people hate the best, but people root for the best, and Brazil is the best, but there's not a lot of reasons to hate them. I would imagine a lot of fans in the United States, just international soccer fans, just people in general, would root for Brazil over the USA.
Maybe.
And I think if it was Brazil versus, I don't know. If it was Brazil versus Argentina, Brazil's getting the majority of the fans.
Yeah.
Tata left a really bad taste in Argentina's mouth. And I think a lot of USA people, like oh my God, I'm going to say this. White people in general will root for Brazil because they're the best. Okay. It's a take.
I will not disagree that's a take, but I really think Americans will be supporting the USA since they are in this tournament.
I'm saying if we're knocked out and it's Brazil versus anybody else.
Versus Canada.
That's not going to happen.
Mexico. Why would it not
Mexico
happen?
Mexico, USA are the only two exceptions to what I'm saying.
I mean, I would support any CONCACAF team.
I will too, but that's also saying that the average laissez-faire fan in the Super Bowl isn't rooting for Tom Brady.
Yeah, I guess.
You know what I mean? Like, people want to root for a winner.
They do.
That's what I'm saying about American culture. When it comes to sports, we root for winners.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, yeah.
Yeah.
Some of us. Yeah, people tend to hop on bandwagon or whatever.
Yes, that's literally the only point I'm trying to make in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if the situation comes up to where it's Uruguay, Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, as long as Brazil doesn't have to play Mexico at any point in that Final Four, Brazil is going to have a majority home fan, like a majority fan base in their games. If it's the U.S., Brazil might still have a majority. If it's U.S. Mexico, Mexico is definitely having a majority. We've done it for decades.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking like in the stadium? I mean,
yeah, inside the stadium, the feel
inside of the stadium. I think it really depends where the game is being played. You know?
Even in Arrowhead.
If it's who, Uruguay and Brazil, I think.
Brazil clearly gets the advantage.
I don't know. I mean,
Brazil, Argentina. Okay. We'll use Kansas City as a good. No, actually, you know what? We'll use the Minnesota Vikings Stadium, even though it's not going to be used. Kansas City would probably be like Arrowhead will be used, right? So no. Let's just go Arrowhead. If it's United States versus Brazil, I would say anywhere from 40% to 60% of the fans are going to be USA.
Yeah. Probably.
Okay.
What if it's USA Mexico?
80% Mexico.
Okay.
It depends on where the match is.
He said at Arrowhead. Kansas City.
Arrowhead.
It'll be 80% Mexico.
I'd say 60% Mexico.
Okay. Now, what if it's Mexico, Brazil?
90% Mexican fans. In Kansas City? How many Brazilians do you know? there's not a ton of. I mean, where are Brazilians at? They're in Miami, New York,
Orlando,
yeah, Florida, New York, Chicago.
This was kind of my point. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm saying. As long as Brazil doesn't have to play Mexico, first off, or the U.S. Now, what if it's Brazil, Argentina?
I think there's a lot more Argentinians here than Brazilians in any city, any major city.
Yeah, but I think all those Mexicans that you just pointed out are going to show up and they're going to root for Brazil.
Well, I think what you want to try to get out is that just the star power of Brazil, like Neymar in general. I mean, people are drawn to people like him, Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe. I think those are probably like the biggest four. Haaland, if you will.
No, yeah. Haaland, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. And I mean, it's interesting. It was brought up too that another reason that they decided to play here is that the Commonwealth teams can kind of like get some familiarity with the U.S. cities and the U.S. stadiums, because the World Cup is then we'll be back in the United States 2 years after that too. So it'll be an exciting time. I mean,
it will be.
I know every day we're getting older, but like, man.
Dude, I wanted to do there was present different scenarios and just show the dynamics. Like there's a lot of dynamics going on here.
I mean, there's dynamics going on, but the only dynamic you said is that everybody's going to be for Brazil. It's like, what other dynamic? What other dynamics we got? We got 10 Commonwealth teams, 6 CONCACAF teams. I think most of them will be handpicked. At least 3 of them will be handpicked. I think Honduras.
I didn't argue with you when you said it would be 80% Mexico fans. I didn't argue there.
So, no, but
there's dynamics. There's dynamics.
Okay. Yeah, there is dynamics, and I mean,
I think Copa America is going to be a good preview to the World Cup. I think looking at the atmosphere of the stadium when the matches happen is going to be a good preview to what happens in 2026.
Yeah. Also, as far as like gambling goes, fanhood goes, it's going to be that same sort of thing we saw summer 2021, where we're going to be watching the Euros 2024 in the morning and the afternoon. And then we're gonna get Copa America.
Hell yeah!
In the evening. That's fucking beautiful. That's almost better than the World Cup, to be honest. Like, because we get soccer all day. It's just gonna be amazing. I'm super excited for that.
I can't complain about that at all.
Yeah, and our favorite brand of soccer. Like, we all love club play, but international play is just a different ball game. It's so much passion. I love it.
It's just different when you play for the crest.
Yeah,
it is.
It is. And you saw it in the World Cup. I mean, that's something I don't think we've actually talked about. This. People that got introduced to soccer who didn't love soccer before and watched that final are the most spoiled people in the world. Like, you don't get that. That does not happen.
Mm-hmm.
That never happens. That final that we got to saw, what was it? 3-3? Was it 3-3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah,
that never happens.
And just checking the preliminary dates, both these competitions are scheduled to kick off June 14th. The Europa final is July 14th. Copa America final, July 13th. So we will literally be seeing this. We'll be watching soccer at 8 in the morning, and we'll be watching soccer at like 9 p.m.
Let's fucking go!
It's going to be amazing.
Oh, I cannot wait. I can't wait.
Soccer overload.
Yeah,
dude, it's going to be incredible. I really hope that this Leeds experiment works out. I hope Pulisic lands at somewhere maybe like Newcastle and plays a lot of minutes. Like, I want our guys to be ready. We got to be ready for that. We can't show up like we did in 2016. We can't. At this point, with the development of youth soccer in this country, we cannot afford another 2016.
We got semifinals at 2016.
Yeah. How'd that go?
We lost to Argentina.
Yeah.
Not even the champs. Yes, Argentina was amazing side, but we got destroyed. We didn't belong in the semis.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just being real. Like, yeah, we made the semis. That's cool. But we did not belong. I want to belong, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I want to belong. I don't want to belong. I want to win.
Yeah, I think it's like, it'll be a good starting off point. Also, very necessary because we will not be playing any meaningful games.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got the Gold Cup or whatever, I think, this summer. And then 2024 will be really the only competitive games because United States does not have to qualify for the 2026 World Cup. As I'm sure if anyone's listening, they probably know that. But, you know, that's just another part of it. So, yeah, having a really strong showing at this tournament is definitely going to go a long way towards confidence and things of that nature for the World Cup.
You know, if we get eliminated in the semis this time, as long as we show that we belong, then I'm okay with it. I think the hardest part is that we shouldn't have been there. 4-0. I mean, dude, you got no business being there. If you get beat 4-0 by a side, it's bad. That's literally 70-10. Nebraska fucking Texas Tech 06 against Mike Leach. Like, I mean, it's bad. 4-0's bad.
I mean, if the Sounders lose 4-0 to Real Madrid, I'm not getting all upset.
Yeah, but now you're talking fucking Minnesota versus Bama.
I know.
I just want to belong. I just want to belong.
It'd be nice.
What, Thomas, what's your ideal result out of Copa America next summer? Other than winning. Like just as a fan, as somebody that wants to see us put ourselves into a world competitive situation, what is your goal? What is your thing that you're saying, hey, if we reach this benchmark, I feel really good about the World Cup. I feel really good about the development of the United States men's national team when it comes to international play. What is your benchmark?
So it's hard to say, because if a team has a bad showing from South America, they can still kind of put it off to as like, well, is this a meaningful tournament? And I know Copa America is a big trophy to win.
No, Copa. Hold up. No. I'm stopping you right there. Copa America is meaningful.
It's meaningful. Okay, so my ideal result would be beating Argentina or Brazil, really either one of those two at some given. If it's in the quarters, the semis, the finals. Okay. Getting to the finals would probably be all right. Winning it would be amazing. I just want to see like a competitive team that like looks like they have a reason to believe for 2026, you know?
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm trying to say. I just want to belong, dude.
Yeah.
I want to feel when that tournament is over, I want to feel like we belong there.
Yeah.
Because I mean, in all reality, what Belgium did to us in 2014 versus what happened this year, which one of those tournaments did we belong more in?
Probably this year.
Maybe.
We were more reputable. We lost to Holland. It could have been a different match. Pulisic makes that left-footed kick in like the first 10 minutes. Probably,
I guess.
Completely different match.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess my point here is that this tournament felt like we had more potential from where we finished at. And that 2014 team, I feel like we maxed out. Like we were at our potential. Like we went beyond our potential. In this last year's team, we were kind of just sitting there in the middle of the road of our potential. Like we did what was necessary, right? Mm-hmm. Am I far off in that assessment?
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think that's all right. Yeah, I think like if I can, you know, teleport myself back to 2014, I really did feel good about the United States after the first two results of the group stage, like up until the 94th minute against Portugal when they drew us.
Fuck,
like, I was like fucking beyond myself. Like I really thought great things would come from it. I thought 2010 too. I mean,
but I still feel like even before Ronaldo scores that goal in 2014, even before that, I feel like I even back then, I remember it. I remember how I felt. I felt like we were overachieving.
Yeah, you're right.
And I felt like this tournament, we achieved at a bare minimum expectation. Like you have to make, dude, you got this many players in Europe, this many guys that grew up with each other, this many guys that are worth this much money, then there's no excuses. You have to make that out of the group stage.
Yeah.
Have to. And they did.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, who, I mean, nobody did. I don't think there were a ton of people, maybe outside of the staunchest U.S. American fans, like who thought we had a shot against Holland. You know, like
I didn't.
Honestly, I think this was like a good thing, a good enough tournament, in the sense that everybody was young. You know, like any the same sort of result in the 2026 World Cup, it's going to be a disappointment. The only difference I really see between is like 2022 and 2014, at least, were like how many eyes were on. I think like major sports media in the US was like, they were like all in on this World Cup. Like it didn't even matter who was, you know, what channel had it, because Fox had it, ESPN covered it, CBS Sports covered it, everybody covered it. 2014, not necessarily. I mean, the soccer fans obviously watched it. They had watch parties that were like that became like internet legends, you know, with like us celebrating goals, like the John Brooks goal, et cetera, et cetera. But like, I felt like this tournament that was like really, I don't really know what, I mean, our expectations were probably higher than what we finished, but like the only difference between that and 2014, honestly, was it's like the major media coverage. Like, I feel like there was more. And so this is an opportunity to build on it because it's not that far off, you know, we're only talking, yes, like 17 months, something like that. We're there. So, I mean, and the build up to the 2026 World Cup. I mean, it'll be an important tournament to not have a bad showing, especially building momentum, I guess, for the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah, that's all I'm trying to say.
Yep. All right. Well said. I think we can go ahead and move on to our picks of the week. You guys are ready?
Sure.
All right. So for my first play, I'm actually going to do two because I know this isn't going to get out there, but I really don't believe in Chelsea right now. I know they just made a big move for Enzo, but Fulham is playing pretty well. And Fulham double chance is plus 130 and under 2.5 is minus 105. So I think there's some money to be made there. I think Fulham is going to try to make it choppy. I don't think Chelsea's good at scoring goals. I think Fulham could win this one to, or draw this 1-1 type of situation. And I think you could hit both plays. So I'm throwing this out there. I'll probably tweet this tomorrow to make sure it gets out there. But those are my first two plays. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next. I actually have three plays from the early kickoff in the Premier League. Two of them are just going to be sprinkle. And then I'll play my actual play. I just have a couple interesting facts. Martin Odegaard has been the first goal scorer in two of Arsenal's last three EPL away matches. This is, by the way, sorry, I didn't say it. This is Everton hosting Arsenal, 6:30 Central AM, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 in Los Angeles. If you want to get up that early to watch Everton lose again, possibly. So Odegaard has scored, been first goal scorer in two of the last three EPL away matches for Arsenal. The other thing I wanted to mention is that Xhaka has scored a goal in each of Arsenal's last three EPL Saturday daytime matches. So I will take a little sprinkle on Odegaard as first goal scorer at plus 600. I'm also going to sprinkle, even though Everton's terrible, Arsenal's great, a plus 180 double chance for a home team in the Premier League is something I think has a lot of value. So I will do a half unit sprinkle on the Everton or draw at plus 180. But my big play is going to be Granit Xhaka to score plus 900.
It's fair.
Very nice.
It's fair.
All right. So for my first play, I mean, I somewhat dumb foolishly, it seems, some start of the year made the prediction that Bayer Leverkusen was going to finish second to Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. And suddenly, here comes Leverkusen. They've been playing very well since Xabi Alonso took charge, and they've got a score to settle with Augsburg here after getting undressed in the first meeting at home against this team. They have never lost at Augsburg, so I'm thinking Leverkusen minus 120 on money line to get the win here on Friday.
Sounds all right.
Yeah, and we're going to go ahead and do this. I got two plays that's going to go directly against Thomas. And the first one is I'm going to take Arsenal -1.5. I think Everton is that bad. -1.5 at plus 115.
It's interesting. That's fine. As long as my two goal scorers score the minimum of two goals that you need for that result. I'll take the loss on the other one.
Well, dude, in all reality, all you need is one of those goal scorers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You need one, and then Arsenal wins by over a goal. 2-0. 3-1.
Yeah. 3-1. Right. All right.
I think Everton's that bad, and I think Arsenal's that good right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just it almost has a feel of that Liverpool, or I mean that Premier League contrarian thing where it's like,
everybody
knows this, so the opposite is gonna happen.
Yep. Yeah. That's exactly why I hate this bet. And to be honest with you, my very next play after this one goes contrarian to your mindset. So like I'm going back and forth between what you're talking about right now.
Right. Yeah. It's tough to it's tough to find plays on some of these games sometimes. Sometimes you just find the perfect one and you're so right, and so it's so easily right. And then other times, what was I even thinking? You know, that's what makes soccer betting so difficult. Yeah.
Yep.
Find the perfect play and it just all goes wrong, even though you did everything right.
Right. Exactly. Yep. All right.
So yeah, that's mine. What's your guys'?
All right. My next one, I'm throwing another little thing at you guys. Manchester United has won each of its last two EPL matches as a home favorite by a scoreline of 3-0. So I'm going to use that little bit of knowledge. They're hosting Crystal Palace on Saturday, 9 Central, 10 Eastern. I'm going to take the Man United to win the nil. You can get it at about even money. I got it at plus 102, which is basically even money.
Wait, Man U what?
Man U what?
To win the nil.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Man U to win the nil. Even money.
Sensible.
Yep.
All right. So for my next play, I am going to go right back to the well that is the Iron Fortress. And I am taking Union Berlin team total over 1.5, which has hit in every home game that we have played this year. And we are getting that at plus 125 against Mainz. We played out a scoreless draw on the road against them earlier this year, but we've outscored them 7-1 in two meetings at home in Bundesliga matches. So I think we can find the net twice.
Yeah, I just wrote it down and underlined it a bunch of times.
So this will be the one where we screw it up.
Right. No. It's team total?
Over team one. Total over 1.5.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I like that one. Yeah. I like it.
And I'm going to go against Thomas again. I'm going to go Man U Palace. Both teams to score, no draw. Somebody's going to win. It doesn't matter who wins, but both teams score.
I like that bet always because you get two options to win. You know, you always have that third factor of a draw, but I'm always a fan of that bet.
It's plus 190.
Plus 190? It's not bad.
I feel like Vegas makes more money off of my bet hitting than your bet hitting in this scenario. Like, I feel like yours is the common sense, like, look at what's happened. Look at how they're playing. Like, I feel like mine's a little bit more contrarian. Not much more, but a little bit contrarian.
Yeah. No, I mean, totally possible. Like I said, I love the draw. I mean, the both teams score, no draw. Because, like I said, you get two options. Sometimes you never know. You never know who that game-winning goal is going to come from in the 87th minute, you know?
Yeah,
It just randomly happens.
And When I look at the schedule for the weekend, this is that game that I circle where it's like, dude, I feel like this is a both teams to score, and one team is way better than the other, and they're home.
Yeah, no, I like it. It's not bad. I know it would make me a loser, but like I lose bets all the time. Trust me,
I'm not. We all, dude. I do too, dude. I go through peaks and valleys just like everybody else too. So you know, it's. I think it adds something to the show for us to be on opposite sides for a couple plays.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Moving on to my next bet. I'm looking at Real Betis and Celta Vigo. It is late Saturday, 2 p.m. I believe that's around 9 or 10 in Spain. And going along with that time for a kickoff, the both teams to score, yes, market has hit in 10 of the last 11 La Liga night matches between Real Betis and Celta Vigo. I have another stat for you that's going to kind of like contradict that. Almost. The under 2.5 goals has hit in each of Celta Vigo's last 6 La Liga matches. Okay. So what do I do with that information? I do the obvious thing. I play the both teams to score. Because you could have both teams to score and still go under 2.5. And that's at plus 108. Both teams score, Real Betis and Celta Vigo.
I mean, if Corey goes against that one, then something.
Yeah, we'll be on to something. I haven't seen him make a play in Spain all season. So if he goes against it, either.
I'm not going to do it. So
obviously. Okay. I am sticking with the Bundesliga here. And I am going to back Borussia Mönchengladbach minus 1.5 against Schalke, because if you've seen Schalke, my deepest sympathies.
Bad. Yeah, they're bad.
I mean, Schalke is current, like, their last Storm Road match, Schalke set the record for most Bundesliga away matches consecutively without a victory. They are now on 36 straight without winning a Bundesliga road match.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. And Gladbach, every time they win, almost, it's by more than one goal. They've only had one win all season that was by a single goal. So I'm thinking with Schalke's terrible performances and Gladbach's tendency to gild the lily, yeah, I'm going to go with Thumb the Fools here, -1.5 at +135.
There you go.
You know, one may say that all good things must come to an end, but, you know.
are we referring to Schalke stay in the Bundesliga there?
Yeah, all bad things must come to an end. That might be a better.
I mean, Schalke is this year's Greuther Fürth.
Yep. Yeah, Bundesliga is kind of getting a thing for that, where somebody gets promoted and just fucking terrible, man. Yep. Yeah. You're up, all Corey.
Right. All right. So I got two more plays. The next one, I'm doing something that I've done on this show, and it seems like I hit this when I say I feel this way, it hits like 60 to 70% of the time. I hate this play, but I want to play this play, and it spurs me in City under 2.5. Just because when you get to this big of a moment, both sides want a point.
Yeah.
And I think both sides can easily score a goal. I like the goals that's the problem with the play, is that under 2.5 means that you can only score two. And this could go 3-3. But under 2.5 is +125. So I'm going to go with the value. And this is contrarian. So it's definitely contrarian.
Yeah, I like that play too, just because of where they both sit in the table. I mean, it's still early as fuck. But, like, you know, if you're at a 1-1 draw, I think both teams, you know, they might be fine with that draw. You know, I don't think a team necessarily plays for a draw still, even match day 22 or whatever it's going to be. But you know, neither one really wants to lose just for European position. I like that play. It's a good play.
It honestly feels like when you're this good and have this much money, it goes low score.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you hear those. Yeah, it is kind of like contrarian too, like you say, because you hear those two teams and your first thought would be the over, like, just because, you know. But I mean, a lot of times matches that are between two big squads, especially in England, you do see something low scoring. Yeah. 1-0, 1-1 draw, 0-0s.
Yeah.
I like it.
I think at worst, this situation ends up happening 2-1 Man City.
Right.
And I think there's too many scenarios where everything below that from a goal scoring perspective happened. Like, I think it's 25% chance that it's over 2.5 and somebody wins.
No, I like it. Sounds like a good play. Play. All right. For my next one, swinging over to Germany. I got another couple little interesting factoids that I used to make my play. The over 2.5 has hit in 18 of the last 20 matches for Dortmund when they've been at home during day matches. I think it's still technically a day match, something like 4:30 Germany time. I don't know. I guess they would consider, I don't know what time they'd consider it's a night match, you know, because it'll be dark. It'll be dark looking, but and then the other thing, Dortmund is one. This is so stupid. This is like probably don't base your betting on it. Like, it's just, it's got to be just sort of coincidence. Dortmund has won each of its last 6 Bundesliga week 19 home match. So the last 6 times that Dortmund has been a home team in week 19, match day 19, they have won. So I'm using those two things put together. They are hosting Freiburg, who's a very, very, very good squad, by the way, over 2.5. And then I'm just going to do that combined with the Dortmund double chance win or draw. And that comes out to -103.
Let's go.
Yeah, not bad.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Text me that one.
Okay.
All right. So Germany has been good to me for a while, so I am going to stick with the Bundesliga yet again. And this one, I'm debating whether I'm going to piggyback a little bit off of Thomas's or, okay, yes, I will. So I'm going to make this a two-game parlay, and I'm going to take Dortmund to win over Freiburg. And I'm going to pair that with Stuttgart and Werder Bremen, both teams to score, because these are not good defenses at all. And Werder has given up 37 goals in 18 matches. And if you look at their recent form, both teams to score has hit in, that's now six of Werder's on past seven matches. And the one time it didn't hit was against Schalke. So, yeah, there's a pretty good chance that both teams are finding the net in this match. So you pair those together, and you've got plus 160. And if you want to just stick to this Werder Stuttgart match, I think a really good Dawn value play could be both teams to score in the match to end in a draw. They finished 2-2 the first time they met, and I think both teams are going to be attacking pretty well from the start in this one. So I like this one to finish level. So that one's at plus 330.
Sounds good.
Yep.
I have two plays left, by the way.
I only have one.
I got one as well.
Okay.
All right. Well, Dan, go with your next one then.
Okay. So my last European play is going to be out of League One in England. And I'm going to go with Bristol Rovers to win and under 3.5 goals, because Bristol Rovers and Milton Keynes Dons are both in pretty wretched form. I do think we're the better side, and we should come away with 3 points here, but I do not think this is going to be a well-played match by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm thinking this is going to be low scoring. It would not shock me at all if this finishes 1-0 Bristol Rovers. So I'm going to give myself a little bit of insurance against Milton Keynes Dons scoring, but Bristol Rovers and under 3.5 at plus 205 looks like a really solid play for me.
Sounds very good.
And this is also the most airtime that Milton Keynes Dons has ever gotten on our podcast.
Yeah. MK Dons. I was going to say, man, be careful. Last time they played, EFL Trophy playoff, 4-1, Bristol Rovers over MK Dons.
They hate them. They hate the Dons. Yep.
Everybody hates the Dons.
Yep.
They stole our Wimbledon team.
All right, so my last line is a three-leg money line parlay. I'm going to go Arsenal money line, Manchester United money line, and Brentford money line, and it's plus 268. If I go ahead and look at it, Brentford is playing Southampton, super bad side.
Yes, they are.
Brentford is at home. Manchester United plays Palace. I respect Palace, but Man U at home, I think they should win that. And then even though it's on the road, I think Arsenal still beats Everton. I'm sorry, Thomas.
Okay.
But you parlay those three together, plus 268. I mean, that negates fucking two-thirds of the rest of my card. Just got to hit that.
Yeah. You only need one.
Yeah. I mean, if I hit that one, all I need to do is hit another one. And if that hits, then Arsenal minus 1.5, that's on the table. If those are the two that I hit, then I finish up. So
Sounds good. My last play, I'm heading over to Serie A. And I believe we're going to have a watch-along party. We have it scheduled, right? This game is Spezia hosting Napoli at 5:30 a.m. Sunday, Central Time. We're doing a watch-along that, right? 6:30 Central? 6:30 Eastern? Nah, I'm just joking around. Very, very early kickoff on Sunday. Spezia, as a home dog, has hit the over 2.5 in the last five Serie A matches as a home dog during daytime. Another daytime thing. And they host Napoli. So I kind of flirted with Napoli in some sort of over, but Napoli is a huge favorite, really. As a road team, minus 300, somewhere in that. So I think what I decided to go with is, and I got two written down, but I think I'm going to go with the over 3.5 in this game, based on that over 2.5 thing that I mentioned. The last five times it's hit when Spezia has been a home dog, and they're a big dog in this. Over 3.5 is +165. So what we're really looking at, we got to get 4 goals. This might be a bad play, man. Like I caution this one. This I hate this one, as Corey has been saying about his. I hate this one. So we're looking at basically Spezia getting 1. I think Napoli maybe is good for 3. So over 3.5 at +165.
Okay.
I really kind of wish I would have just left that off my card, to be honest. Like, reading it out loud for the first time.
That's, dude, yes. No, that's what we give the people.
Yeah.
That's why we give it to the people. Dude, Spurs Man City under 2.5. I should not be betting that.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, let's go.
I'll be watching. I'll be calling you guys. I'm gonna FaceTime you guys 5:30 in the morning.
I'll answer.
I will not.
I will.
I will have FaceTime turned off.
All right.
So playing at a much more reasonable noon Eastern kickoff on Saturday, I got to go with the Sounders money line at +155 against Al-Ahly. If it's not currently on the board yet for anything beyond the money line, but if I can, I think I'm going to go. I'm going to take a shot on Sounders and under 2.5 goals, because I expect this is going to be a defensive battle. I think that's exactly the way that Al-Ahly wants to play it. I think the Sounders are going to take a little bit of time to get into attacking form, given that we've only been playing friendlies, but I think we can win this match. So I'm going to say that moneyline +155 offers a lot of value.
I think the word of the day for that game is going to be choppy.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Choppy. I already forgot again. Al-Ahly is from
Egypt.
Yeah. So Northern African team versus MLS has the potential to be super choppy. Even both teams were in form.
Rock fight.
Yeah. I love that play.
Another one. If you can find the market for it, Rui Diaz to score is probably going to be a solid play, because he always seems to show up in big matches.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
Love him.
Yep.
Dude's got to be like 36 years old at this point.
Close to that. I think you're kind of arrow there.
Don't care.
See, Rui Diaz is 32.
32. He's 6 years younger than me. Jesus Christ.
Well, I'm all out of plays. What about you guys?
Yep, that was my last one.
All right. Well, this was fun.
Good show. Long show.
Mm-hmm. All those Brazilian fans living in the United States are going to be super excited by this episode, I think.
Well, I hope we jack them up.
Both of them.
But we will see you next week.
Yep.
Love you guys. Hey, real quick, shout out to Coda Cappers. Not another college football podcast. Throwing Bows doesn't seem to be doing anything. Nobody else really seems to be doing anything. So Gambling Feud.
Yeah, Gambling Feud is.
Yep. Yep, at Gambling Feud on Twitter. Go give at Code Cappers a follow. Fuck the intern.
Yep.
Nobody likes the intern.
Night.
Bye.